Podcast. My name is Jake Knight, and I'm here with Pastor Kevin Robertson, and it's March 22nd, 2017, and he's excited, which it seems like he's excited every week to talk to people, so this should be fun.
Actually, thank you, and the reason I had Jacob do it, because I kept cracking up when I was trying to do the introduction.
I don't like the fact that he left me out of this.
On the interview?
He's like, I'm here with Pastor Kevin Robertson. This is Jacob Evers, by the way, the guy who was just talking best friend. But it's fine. He can leave me out of
okay.
it. So.
Well, anyway, I kind of wanted to. He's a cat person.
I am a cat person.
But anyway, I want to interview Jacob Knight and Jacob Evers together. Now, Jacob Knight, he's on his way to ordination, to be ordained as a denomination. And Jacob already was ordained exactly about a year ago.
About a year ago.
Does that make sense? About
a year ago, yeah.
Why do you have to correct me perfectly?
Because keeping you honest.
That's true. So anyway, so going back, Jake, okay, you tell me about your upbringing. Tell me about, did you grow up in the church? How was your relationship? How did you grow up?
Very nicely. No, I grew up in the church. My parents were youth leaders with you.
Right. At the Herman Community
Church. Yeah, unfortunately for them, because I can only imagine. But so we grew up in the church and, kind of following that prototypical, Christian who grew up in the church. I, said the prayer when I was 4 or 5. I don't remember. Vacation Bible School.
Right, and we talked about that, the sinner's prayer, right?
Yeah.
And then you were talking about this, Jacob. It's not biblical.
Well, it's just, it's not in the Bible.
Okay.
And so I think that kind of what we talked about is that as a signpost to lead someone to following Jesus as Lord is great, but to kind of say this is the one way that you do it, that's not –
okay.
That's not how it goes.
So you were about 4 or 5, Jake.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly.
Okay, so you were young. So there was a time that I remember that you just said, screw this. I'm not even going to part of the church anymore. Tell me about that.
It was in high school. At the time, we were going to a somewhat large church.
Okay.
I mean, there was probably about, probably anywhere from 50 on up kids in the youth group. And
big youth group.
Yeah, very big. And it... what's funny, too, is I really got along well with our youth pastor at the time, but there was a lot of disconnect from the questions I was asking about what it meant to follow God and what it meant to be a Christian, and what was being said was not always being modeled by those around me, especially those who were viewed as the good Christian kids in the youth group, kind of the student leaders, if you will, of the group. And so being pushed to the outside from it, I kind of got to the place where if you're talking about being welcoming to people, but you're not actually putting in action.
Right, it's more selective.
Yeah, then I want no part of this.
Okay.
And so I kind of rebelled and stopped going to church altogether for a period of time.
And you started drinking too, in a sense.
I got
13, started drinking.
Had my fake ID. No, it was, when I got into college, I got, I struggled with who I was and where my place was, because all my friends from high school went away to school, and I stayed here, and so I found kind of my place to belong in a fraternity.
Okay,
and so I kind of became that prototypical frat guy that I drank 6 days a week.
Okay,
and, I think that first quarter of my freshman year in college, I had a 1.5 GPA. My priority was
– I did that without drinking. I got a 1.75 GPA.
There's your badge of honor.
I didn't drink.
Okay. Mine was worse.
Okay.
But I got heavily into this party scene, but still at the same time knowing what was right, because I was raised in the church and raised by parents who loved and definitely modeled Christ to me growing up. And so there was always that tension of, like, I know this is wrong, but I have, other than my parents, who at that time, you know, being 17, 18 years old, who care? I didn't care what they said to me because it was wrong in my mind. But I was valued and belonged to this group of guys who, at, when it came time for me to quit the fraternity, pretty much kicked me to the curb and have not talked to me since.
The people in the fraternity.
Yeah, the people who I felt like I belonged with and who made me feel like I belonged, when I went against or, you know, stopped wanting to be a part of the group, said, okay, well, we'll see you later, kind of the thing. Do your own thing.
So then you left this super big church with a big youth group. I mean, you left for a while. And then how did you discover the church you're attending now? Did you just go?
It was kind of a last-ditch effort by my parents to kind of I was really starting to go down some rough roads with the fraternity and kind of the things I was doing in my life. And my mom was working with our pastor's wife, Nikki, at the time. And Nikki was constant about, you know, bring them to Grace Point, bring them to Grace Point. Like, we have some solid young adults who will really
And your parents were part of the Grace Point Church then, right?
Yeah, we all started going as a family.
Okay.
And so that kind of started this next journey.
Next journey, getting your life back with the Lord.
Yeah, it really happened on in our college group where I met Jacob.
Right.
And for the first 6 months, I sat in the corner, said absolutely nothing.
Oh, really?
But just kind of took in everything that was being said and talked about. And I think what really stood out to me was the genuineness of everyone.
Right.
Even though it was obvious that there was not agreement on every single topic we talked about. I mean, there were weeks where, you know, there would be just like yelling matches with each other.
Really?
But at the end of the night, like, we were joking around with each other because what was understood and what was being showed to me was that we may disagree. There may be disagreements. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, Jesus is first.
Right.
And
then you guys love and care about each other.
Yeah. Where the relationships were more important than whether or not we agreed on small things.
Right. Yeah, and that makes sense, too. And so, Jacob, you were the youth college pastor then?
No, I was the youth pastor.
Okay,
so
you were the youth
junior
pastor.
High and high school. Nikki, our pastor's wife, was the college pastor.
Okay. And so therefore you were learning, we can disagree on something, but yet we have compassion and love for each other. That's one thing you've learned in that church.
Yeah. And the love that people had for Christ matched what they said and what they did and how they treated everyone.
Right.
That's really what stuck out to me.
Right.
So even though, you know, we joke about it now, but even though I sat in that corner in the same chair for the first 6 months of being a part of the college group, I saw what it meant to be a part of the community of Christ in a completely new way that really began to convict and push me to closer to making that decision to really commit back to Christ and to living a life for Him.
So authenticity is important. One thing you realize, if I can be open with my brokenness and still be accepted and still be loved, then basically, then I'm feeling like not only that I'm accepted in the church, but I'm also accepted by Jesus.
Hmm.
Maybe not approved, you know, and what I'm going through and I'm drinking a lot or whatever that may be. But He still loves me. He still cares for me. He died on the cross for me. And so therefore, my passion, and I've seen this with you, Jake, that when you develop a passion for Christ and want to get closer to the Lord, then you decide, okay, I need to give up this lifestyle. I need to give up doing this thing in college. You know, my friends they're not my friends anymore.
You start asking questions. Is this person or this activity or action going to build me up and encourage me towards Jesus and what he's calling me to in my life, or are they not? And then at that point, and you know, there came a time where I had to make hard decisions, where I had to say goodbye to friends or who I thought were friends with the fraternity, as well as friends that I had known from, you know, junior high and high school years that I partied with as well. In a couple instances became kind of this, I was afraid of kind of what would happen where, you know, just threats of like, you know, I'm going to beat you up kind of a thing. And so there was that factor of like, you know, like it wasn't just like, I'm going to stop being a part of the fraternity. Like I'm going to stop these friendships or I'm going to let these friendships fizzle because I don't feel like they are helping me or building me towards what Jesus has called me or desires for me to be as a person.
Right. And they would not accept that. Like all of a sudden you say, you know, I'm going to follow Christ and go, hey, whatever's good for you, do it. It's not like that. They're mimicking you and making fun
of you. Well, and it came down to like, I can't hang out very late tonight because I got church tomorrow morning. Right. And they'd be like, well, you know, and not so plain language and more colorful language, like you're bleep, 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 bleep kind of a thing. And so in a sense that made it easy to kind of step away from that. Yeah. But it was also difficult because people who, you know, when you struggle with kind of where you belong and who you are and people who place value to you, you know, it's difficult. It's not as easy to walk away with, Jacob and I are really close now, but we were just starting our friendship at that time.
Right.
And so I was going from relationships that I was comfortable in and really close with into these new friendships and relationships that I was building that, you know, I had no clue if they would last or kind of what they would look like even, you know, a few months down the line.
Right.
So,
and Jacob's friendship with you grew to the point that he was your best man at your wedding.
Yeah.
And so
now I'm his best man. So
yeah, you're getting married to me.
I am. Yeah.
We talked about it in the December podcast.
Yes.
Which if you listen to the December podcast, and I asked him right at the beginning of the podcast, what date were you engaged? And it took him like 10 seconds to figure out it was November.
November 5th.
So you're good. Okay,
I learned.
He's got a reminder in his phone. Yeah,
November
5th.
And my understanding is Jacob's getting married the 1-year anniversary of your first date.
Yep, May 20th.
May 20th. So, see.
You remember better than I do.
Yes.
Surprisingly.
Because I remember the podcast.
That's true.
I was there when I was interviewing you.
Yeah, hey, that's right.
He remembers when he
hears himself. I know. Oh, that's the deal.
I remember that. So this is when I first went to ministry, I was probably younger than you guys. Somebody asked me this point in question I want to ask you. What they said to me, said, if you could do anything in the ministry, if you could do anything for Christ besides ministry and be fulfilled, then do that. And they said, make it your last option to be in ministry full time because there's not enough benefits. And so both of you are going into full time ministry. So the question is, what are you guys thinking? Why in the world would you want to go into full time ministry? Why do you want to be ordained to do something that causes a lot of stress in relationships or even in marriages?
A large part of it is my passion and my desire is for teenagers.
Okay.
And so as much as I want to be, kind of like I would, you know, envision kind of the ideal role for me as like an associate pastor that oversees kind of the youth and kids. But my formative years in high school, much as I liked my youth pastor, because it was such a big church and there wasn't a structure in place to kind of mentor and reach as many kids as possible within the youth group, I kind of fell through the cracks. And what I've learned is that your age does not limit what you are capable of or gifted in doing for the body of Christ. And I've had the opportunity to see and watch teenagers that have gone through the youth group since I've been there as the youth pastor, who are extremely talented and have a passion for Christ that I, you know, that is unmatched.
Right.
And when given the opportunity to use those gifts, I mean, God has been glorified through and through. And so I want to kind of, my desire is to kind of squash that misconception that you have to be an adult in order to make an impact for Christ. And so that wasn't there for me when I was a teenager.
Right.
And so part of my desire and passion comes from wanting to be what I didn't have.
Absolutely. And I would assume now, because you're a parent of two children,
mm-hmm.
and I would assume that you're hoping the same thing for your children, that they will see consistency in your life like you saw in your parents' life,
mm-hmm.
but also consistency in the church that you're the associate pastor as well.
Right.
And so, now how about you, Jacob? Why in the world?
I have no idea.
Isn't it interesting, a calling?
It is. And I think for me, I think I would want to do something else.
Okay.
like we've kind of talked about it before, that I am somebody who likes to be liked.
Right.
And the pastorship does not lend well to people like me.
Right.
Because there's going to be lots of times where you're going to be liked.
Right.
But as you've talked about, as my dad has talked about, who's a pastor in mm-hmm. Washington, as Pastor Steve has talked about,
mm-hmm.
there's more times where as a pastor you're not going to be liked.
Right.
And so on the one hand, I think the Lord, through my mentorships and other places, is starting to do a work in me to understand that.
Yeah.
But if I could, I'd much rather get paid full time to be like the Jungle Cruise captain and tell jokes all the time at Disneyland than be a pastor. But I think at the end of the day, my calling is to be a pastor for those who need it most.
Right.
And I think about somebody who I admire quite a bit, and I've read quite a few of her books, Nadia Boltz-Weber, who is the pastor of a church called House for All Sinners and Saints in Denver, Colorado.
Okay.
But reading her journey of, in a different way than me, coming to the place where you encounter enough people who I think want to be a part of the church, but for whatever reason, whether it's a pastor or a person or a full community or whatever, has turned them off to the church.
Right.
Like, I see myself and my fiance and I have talked about what it looks like for us to almost be pastors to the messy.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
well, that's something we talk about at Grace Point a lot.
Yeah.
And that I really appreciate is that, and this is kind of what has gotten me to where I'm at, is, you know, the, you know, we oftentimes we think that like being comfortable is kind of the ideal place.
Right.
Whereas Jesus, and who he interacts with and who he ministers to throughout the Gospels, is leading us to this place of it's okay to be in the middle of the mess and to be uncomfortable.
Right.
Because that's when you see your need for God the most.
Oh, absolutely.
And so that's something that I know, like, this past week with the sermon that Steve preached, is we want to be – the desire to be in the midst of the mess is kind of where we want to be. And I think,
yeah, I mean, I want the church doors to be open to everybody,
right?
Like, no matter what. And I think that's the hard part, right? Because that's where the mess happens. Well, that's where you have people who are uncomfortable in your church that would normally be comfortable in other churches, is when you're willing to open the doors to anybody and say, we love you.
Yeah.
We may not always agree.
Right.
We may not always get it right. We may say things that are going to hurt you, and you may say things that are going to hurt me.
Right.
But ultimately, at the end of the day, being in community with each other, being in fellowship with each other, right. working this whole mess that we call life out together yeah. in the name of Jesus
yeah.
is more important than what you look like when you walk through those doors. Right. And I think that's where I see my calling as a pastor is going to right. be, is willingness to be extremely uncomfortable with some of the people that may walk through those doors, but recognizing that the gospel of Jesus is for everybody, right. not just for white middle-aged folks who wear a suit every single Sunday.
Absolutely.
Now, the gospel's for them too,
yeah.
and they have a place in the church just as much as anybody else, but at times we've almost relegated it
yeah.
to you have to look and talk and feel this way, when Jesus encountered lots of people that looked and talked differently
yeah.
than what we may think is acceptable in the church today.
Oh, absolutely. And going back to where you said, I want to be liked.
Yeah.
If you preach the gospel, the gospel requires conviction
mm-hmm.
on everybody.
Yeah.
And a lot of us, evangelicals, do not like to be convicted.
Yeah.
We like to be justified.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to change. Everybody else needs to change. And so, therefore, let's say, like, for us, we had 170, 180 people in church on Sunday. I have to try to get everyone to like me and say everything. So, therefore, it's uplifting, but not convicting, so they'll like me. And that doesn't work.
Now, that sounds tiring.
It is. It's emotionally draining. So, the only time you and I, when we're in ministry, we have to please one person, and that's Jesus.
That's a good point.
That's it.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
We have to please Christ. And that needs to be when we're doing the sermon prep, when we're doing putting the services together, when we're talking to somebody, that we speak the truth with what? Love.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Speak yeah. the truth in love. So you guys are just as dumb as me going into ministry full time. I've been doing it for 33 years. You guys, you're both a part-time. I am assuming you're part-time. But eventually, both of you want to do it full-time in ministry, correct?
Something like that, yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So now you were ordained, and I think we talked about it over a year ago. You're looking at your hopefully being ordained in a year or so.
Yep.
And so you got these doctrinal questions. I like DQ. It sounds like Dairy Queen. But anyway, he calls
it. That's what I initially thought that was when yeah. he first told me
right.
he was
yeah.
doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
that,
Dairy Queen? What are you doing at Dairy Queen?
Because we call it DQ because we want to be hip.
Yeah, exactly.
We call it DQ.
Well, also, doctrinal question. Like, I might get tongue-tied saying that.
Yeah, so. I was going to say. Doctrinal questionnaire also sounds a lot more prestigious than it is.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
I'm fancy.
So basically, I got to fill out my DQ, which means my application to work at Dairy Queen, right?
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
So anyway, we're not going to say your denomination because I don't want your denominational superintendent to get mad at me for making fun of the DQ. But
you had to fill one out, basically.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
every denomination has one.
Mine was crayons.
Well, for you.
Yeah.
They just write it
with chalk on a chalkboard.
Yeah, I can explain sanctification in a picture. I can do that.
One big heart.
One big heart. So. Anyway, I get no respect. I sound like Rodney Dangerfield.
I was going to say, what are you doing to Rodney Dangerfield in front of you?
What? Going in a different direction.
We're talking about Rodney Dangerfield, and Jake's like, oh, I'm going to go to Mr. T. Okay. Anyway, sorry. Yeah.
So anyway, so you're filling out, developing the types of pastors you want to become. And so I think it would be neat to talk about, you know, we would talk about reaching out to people that would normally would not reach out to mm-hmm. the typical evangelical church. Because sometimes we have tendencies to take particular sins that we may not necessarily struggle with, and we'll make it the capital, and we will preach against it and basically fire and brimstone kind of thing. Not our local churches,
mm-hmm.
but the church in general.
Yeah.
That I think, for me, it does more damage to the kingdom of God when we pick a particular sin or a particular lifestyle, and that is our theme. And so we just go, it doesn't make any sense.
And the church has done it throughout all of history.
Right.
Right. So we just happen to be living in a context right now.
Right.
Where it's probably a little bit more heightened, but yeah, the church has done that throughout all of history.
Okay. So Jake, let's go back to, no, yeah, Jake.
Yeah.
Jake.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
that's Jake.
Jake, my godson, you and I, we got together a month ago, and one thing I love about my godchildren is every once in a while, they'll give me a call and say, let's get together. Actually, you're the only one that does it.
That's right, Hannah and Abby.
But anyway, we had the most deepest conversation, incredible conversation about compassion and about love. And about embracing the person. And so why don't we start on the story, what you were talking about. We won't use the person's name because we haven't got permission yet from him. So tell us about our conversation we had.
Well, I think that as I've kind of been journeying through seminary, and this is not new to anyone. I mean, right. these are new... not struggles, but new, like, I guess wrestling and
right.
just kind of new perspectives anyways, is as I've kind of been journeying through this, and as I've, gotten older and been trying to figure out kind of what kind of pastor I am and what it means to be Jesus to my students at Alive,
right.
But also to the people that I work with at both my jobs and stuff, I've come into contact with a lot of people who I think would be pushed away from the church.
Okay.
And so the question of how can I reflect Jesus to people who more than not are pushed away from the church and I'm talking the church at large,
right?
You know,
we're not talking about Change Point, which you go to. We're not talking
Grace
about
Point.
The,
Grace Point, yeah.
Where did I get Change Point?
I don't know.
That's a point. Okay, that's a point. Change Point, Grace Point, Grace Point.
Yeah, I feel like at Grace Point, and I know at for the few times that we visited your church,
yeah.
like both places are very welcoming and willing to see the person. And I've experienced that at Grace Point.
Okay.
You know, coming in as this frat guy,
right.
I was seen as Jake, not as the frat guy. And
yeah.
so the question,
I saw you as the frat.
Yeah. I broke Jacob's hard exterior and I'm kidding.
I don't know what he's talking about. I'm a big softie.
Okay.
He was the first one. No,
but anyway,
but
what you're doing, you accepted even going through your fratness and whatever it is.
Yeah.
What is it, fratness?
Sure.
Or your little
party. It's a new word.
Party.
Call Webster. We'll get in the dictionary.
I definitely have my own vocabulary.
Yeah, you do.
And so,
no, but it's become aware to me what it means to show compassion to people, especially being in situations where you come in being seen and known as one thing.
Right.
You know, for instance, the restaurant I work at,
right.
I came in and before people even knew my name, they knew me as the pastor.
Right.
Because I married the brother of one of the managers.
Right.
And not
but you officially.
I officiate. See, I'm still learning the language.
Okay.
But and so you know, I came in with this this expectation or this, you know, preconception
right.
of who I am.
Right.
And it's allowed me the opportunity to ask the question, like, this is what I'm seen as. How can I show them Jesus
right.
without doing it in a way that is judgmental,
right.
that is closed off,
right.
that, you know, it's not, and I don't do it in a way that, you know, I accept and condone and agree with every, you know,
absolutely.
Decision made
yeah.
by each person, but it's, you know, how can I love that person
yeah.
knowing that Jesus on that cross
right.
was meant just as much for them as it was for me.
And the thing is too, is when you're known as a pastor, they just assume you're this religious leader that basically you have this stance, you're very judgmental, you're very 50-something, you know, and they have all this negativity, and they change who they are when they're talking to you. Because they're thinking, he's going to be very judgmental. And you're going, no, I'm not judgmental. But it's just a stereotype that non-Christians look at pastors and just...
Well, but the hard question we have to ask ourselves as pastors is...
Have we earned it?
Is it not right? Yeah, I mean, just overall. I mean, not saying that the pastors that we've come in contact with or those that are influential in all our lives are like that.
We've had some but very good examples.
Yeah. I don't lead with it.
Right.
Like, I usually leave it out. Like, I'll talk about other things.
Right.
And then it'll be like, oh, and by the way, I'm a pastor. And people are like, it changes. Right. It changes when they get to know you first, too.
That's absolutely true.
And so, I mean, we have to keep in balance, right? Yeah. So the
way you two want to reach out in church is reaching out to people that not necessarily want to be part of the evangelical tradition. What?
And I think I heard it said by a pastor once that that I listen to often is you want your response to be, first of all, God loves you. Mm-hmm. I love you.
Right.
So tell me what it's like to be you. Right. And start there. Build a relationship with people. And then, you know, build trust. Right. And then you can start speaking into each other's lives.
Right.
And start wrestling with where you differ.
Right.
I think we jump, and, you know, in the church jumps to, you know, what is different,
right,
and hones in on that, and the church becomes known as what it's against,
right,
rather than what it's for. It's for.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that's kind of where, at least, I don't want to speak for you, but that's kind of where I found myself wanting to come from.
So if we look at this, that all of a sudden now you're facing a situation here, and you have a very good friend. Both of you have a very good friend that was part of your wedding, and he's going to be part of weddings to come. And so all of a sudden you had this friend that you've known since college, right?
Last
10 years. That just a few months ago he said.
It's been over a year.
Over a year ago, he told you? Okay. And what did he say?
He came out as gay.
Okay.
And so, you know, and I think, you know, I don't want to focus so much on that. I just lost my train of thought.
You, it's a short little train. And so when I look at...
that was a good one. I like
you
that.
Like that?
Yeah, he said it's a short little train. And then you reinforced it with...
So, but anyway, the thing is, what's fascinating about this story and talking to you, Jake, is that basically is you're looking at your friend as a friend. You're not focusing on his behavior, in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, big picture too with anyone.
Right.
You know, you want to approach each person as a person.
Right.
And I mean, I'm guilty of it. You know, I don't always do that. And unfortunately,
right,
you know, stereotypes are real and because the way that, you know, the culture right today is you're kind of inundated with it, with
right
stereotypes. And so you kind of default to that. But it's like I said before, I want to get to a place where my response is first and foremost, like, I love you.
Right.
Like, tell me more about you.
Right. As a person.
Yeah. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, even Jesus met with tax collectors, with prostitutes,
right,
with people who were the scum of the earth at that time.
Right.
And yet, you know, and was very upfront with their sin and being against it, or, you know, not agreeing with what they did.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't keep him from having a relationship with that
right
person.
Right.
You know, I think of the woman at the well. Like, I mean, he did not hide that he didn't agree with, how many husbands she had and stuff.
Right.
And but it, he still stopped, had a conversation with her, offered her the chance at having living water, and offering her the chance to know who God is.
Right.
And had a conversation with her in the middle of the day, which at that time was not okay. I mean,
right.
If you look at the story, his disciples are nowhere to be found because they don't want to be associated with him.
Right.
So I think what is most important is that we see the person first.
Right.
And get to know them.
Right.
And not focus so much. You know, and that doesn't mean that we agree with and accept and say everything's okay. You know, there it's okay to wrestle with and to disagree.
Right.
But like I said earlier, like if, you know, you have to see the person
mm-hmm.
first and understand that they are loved and cherished by Jesus and that him dying on the cross was just as much for them as it is for you.
Yeah, I think that we have to get to this place of understanding in the church that if we're going to choose to do church with different people, then it's going to be messy.
Right.
Like, regardless of what it is, and we can have all sorts of conversations about different things, whether we think something's a sin or not.
Right.
You know, I think we have to take a step back from even that and
right.
say, if I'm going to have a church that opens the doors for everybody, then I'm going to have to be willing to be friends and do life with Republicans and Democrats and
right.
independents and Green Party members
yeah.
and, you know, libertarians. And then I also need to be okay with doing church with people that are, you know, from the Lutheran Church, the Catholic Church,
right.
the Methodist Church, the Anabaptist churches.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's take a step back and say, and on top of that, I need to be okay with doing church alongside people who, you know, are gay, people who maybe think that, you know, evolution
right.
is the way that the earth was created
right.
with people who, you know, believe that you should dunk versus sprinkle versus, you know, I mean, you could just go down the list.
Right.
And
it causes more of a separation.
Exactly.
In unity in Jesus.
Exactly. So I think what we need to do is step away from our microcosm of like looking at this one issue under
okay.
a telescope or a microscope
okay.
and kind of take the lens back and say, and that's what I think Jake was hitting on that really struck me, is that like we have to be willing to walk with people,
right.
to listen to people.
Right.
I think the church has lost the art of listening.
And very quick to judge. Because, okay, let me be the devil's advocate.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know why I use the word devil, but let me be devil's advocate. Guys, I'm going to talk like an old man. If you're going to the ministry, you got to hold to the biblical principles. And if they particularly say a lifestyle is wrong, then you don't embrace that person until they receive Jesus in their lives.
Wow.
Okay? Well, no, we hear this a lot, right?
Yeah, okay.
And this is how I grew up. That basically, I grew up is that around, if you're gay, that forget it. They're not part of the church. It's not told. But that's how we grew up. And I've seen this with people that come to church, and it shows you that people that are homosexual, that they have, statistic-wise, they came from the evangelical churches. So they have a spiritual desire to go back to church. They do. But somehow, we as Christians don't allow that. And we don't say anything. And so what you guys are saying is saying, look, don't focus on the lifestyle. Focus on the person, right?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a scary place to be for
yeah.
a lot of people.
Right.
I think that we also have to be open and loving also towards our own brothers and sisters in Christ
right.
and be willing to walk with them through the process
right.
as well,
right?
Right? Because I think one of the things that we tend to do is as the church kind of pendulum swing.
Right.
And so we're either on the far right saying one thing
right.
or on the far left saying another thing,
right.
but there's no in between anything. And so
right.
we need to have grace and love for people in and outside of the church.
And that's the name of your church.
Yep.
Grace Point.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I'm assuming the point of your church is grace.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a sense, this is where I think evangelicals have problems, that we can receive grace, but we're not going to give it. We can say, yeah, I've been saved by grace, but we come very judgmental. And I think when we truly receive the grace of God, we embrace a person.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter what they've done or who they've done, but our job, I believe, that we bring them to the feet of Christ.
Yeah.
And that's important because Jake's little motto in life, and I love, is that God is a judge, the Holy Spirit does the convictions, and I'm like Jesus, and I need to show compassion.
Well, I mean, that's Billy Graham said that, and
I'm giving you the quote.
Well, I can't yeah, right. take from Billy Graham what Billy Graham said.
Okay, Billy Graham said.
But I think this is where it gets kind of messy is that when you start going this direction, you start embracing the person, it's perceived that you're giving up your convictions. And I don't see it as that way. I think it – and part of the desire to be uncomfortable and to be amidst the mess
right.
is allowing your convictions to be challenged because that it only strengthens them,
mm-hmm.
I think. And that's one of the things that I've found in school is that – I do not see things the same way that every person in my classes see it.
Right.
And I know like Jacob can attest from his time at Fuller, but you do not have the same convictions and belief or in morals and values as every single person in your class.
Right.
But what makes it great and what makes it, makes that time beneficial is the desire to share and to challenge, knowing that at the end of the day, Jesus is at the center.
Right.
That the cross is at the center.
Right.
And sometimes I think we forget that when convictions are challenged or when they're called into question, it's like we're throwing out,
right.
We're throwing Jesus out of the mix. And I right. think, you can hold to your convictions, but still be willing to ask questions.
Yeah. And I want to take that a step further in my life as well. My undergrad at Cal State Fullerton was in comparative religion.
Mm.
And I didn't take comparative religion or religious studies in order to walk away with this grand knowledge so that I could go in and challenge every other religion and show them why they're wrong.
Right.
I actually, as I look back on it, still study other world religions so that I can try to have a better understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So that when I go into a conversation with somebody, mm-hmm. instead of having my like Christian shield up that
right.
says like, let me reflect everything to show you how you're wrong.
Yeah, and that reflects self-righteous anyway.
Exactly. Well, okay. Exactly. I want to go into those conversations so that when I'm talking with people of other world religions, I can actually understand where they're coming from
right.
and recognize that like all of those religions, whether we like to think it or not as the church
right.
are coming from a similar place that we are
mm-hmm.
of wanting to love
right.
whatever we call God
yeah.
and then love other people.
Right.
And that's a really good common place to start. Even if my conviction is that Jesus Christ died on the cross and rose again 3 days later so that all of the world can be redeemed to what I believe to be the one true God.
Right, right.
But when I start in a place of wanting to understand and listen,
right.
it drops walls so much quicker
yeah.
than walking in with, let me tell you how I'm right without
right.
you even
and
starting the conversation.
I think this is happening a lot since the elections because we can be polarized however we believe that we get in this discussion, whether you're Trump supporter or a non-Trump supporter, that basically you just go, I need to be right. I need to be right.
Yeah.
And therefore, you can argue about what is truth and not truth and the facts. And then we disagree and we have alternative facts.
Yeah.
But deep down, when we're sharing the compassion and love for Christ, therefore, it pulls the walls down.
Yeah, well,
I would assume.
I mean, and this happens, I think this happens in the non-Christian world too.
Yeah.
I don't think it does. It absolutely does.
Yeah.
Because look at how bipartisan we are becoming as a country.
Right.
Not to bring politics into it, because
right.
that's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah.
But
prefer us not to.
Look at how, I mean, all people who study politics right now talk about how this is the most bipartisan we've ever been in American history.
Right.
And look at the damage that it's doing to our country, because we can't get anything done, because if the Republicans say they're going to do something, the Democrats say no.
Right.
And if the Democrats say they're going to do something, the Republicans say
right.
no. When even just 20 or 30 years ago, there was at least still people willing to reach across the aisle and try and get stuff done
right.
together, because they recognized that that was the only way it was going to get done. They still held to their convictions.
Right.
Democrats still believed what they believed, and Republicans
right.
still believed what they believed,
right.
but they were willing to compromise in order to do things
right.
in a way for the country that would be better. Whereas now, we're just going to continue in this stalemate
right.
until the end of time.
Right.
Taking that back to kind of kingdom perspective, and we talked about this in church a couple weeks ago, but how different would the world look if we kind of dropped those, oh, you're a Baptist, or oh, you're a Catholic.
Right.
Oh, how different would the world look if the body of Christ came together and didn't see itself as one part as better than the other, but as a whole? How different would the world look? And
absolutely.
And I think where I find myself is, and there's a lot of, you know, preconceptions that I have to continually check myself on,
right.
When it comes to stuff like this. But, you know, I want to get to a place where, you know, I am Jesus's hands and feet, and just as he called people throughout scripture,
right.
as he's called me, I want to move and act and respond in a way that furthers his kingdom
right.
rather than my own
right.
whatever.
That brings healing rather than division.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would guess it. Now, while we wind the podcast down, I think you guys would be great doing ministry together. I know you're doing ministry together, but in my little mind, I think Jacob, as a senior pastor, you as associate, because you have a heart for the youth, or vice versa, I don't care. But I think... I think you two will be incredible in ministry together. So let me ask you guys this question. In the perfect scenario, what would your church look like 5 years from now if you were leading? What would you want to see the effects of when people are coming to your church, and what would you love to see? Because you mentioned that you want to get to the point of dirty. To reaching out to people that are unchurched and stuff like that. What would this look like in you guys' eyes that you think the Lord's leading?
I'm going to let you go first on this one.
Is it a difficult question?
It is. And I think that Grace Point, in the church that I'm thinking about, like my ideal church in my mind, right? Which I know is not going to be the church that I end up pastoring
okay.
because in my mind, I kind of have this like idealized, romanticized sort of like,
oh,
I'm
going to
go out and
yeah.
put on the cape and save the world sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I want to preface with that.
Yeah.
I think that Grace Point is doing exactly what Grace Point needs to do.
Right.
And I think it's beautiful
okay.
and it's working towards continually doing that.
Right. Reaching out to the people that it has in the community.
Exactly. And it's great. And where it is in South Ontario and what it's doing for South Ontario
right.
is what South Ontario needs.
Right.
So I don't want to diminish or downplay anything that Grace Point
yeah.
is doing. So I want to start there.
That's a huge
maybe
what
you know,
we're doing is
10-15
Yeah,
years
and what
more.
We're doing as a part of Grace Point is really trying to make sure that we support the vision that Steve has for Grace Point.
Right.
I think
Steve is
what Pastor Steve,
pastor.
Yeah, he's our
yeah.
senior pastor, and what Pastor Steve is doing with Grace Point, I think, is beautiful and wonderful.
Right.
So, like, let's say it's 10 years down the road, and
right.
I'm pastoring my own church, whatever that. Or Laura and I are pastoring our own church.
Right.
I think part of the conversation for us is, in some form of way, being somewhat bivocational,
okay.
Whether it be tent making
right,
in a sense,
right.
To
now
use
explain
Christianese. Tent-making. I was going to say to use Christianese, right? So Paul was what I guess we would say a tent maker, and
right.
back in the ancient Middle East, that was literal. 2,000 years ago,
right.
he was literally making tents, but he was doing that as a way to pay his own way,
right,
so that the church didn't have to do that, right? So as he was kind of traveling and planting these churches, okay, he would plant himself in a city, set up shop, be doing the marketplace thing,
right,
whatever that is, Monday through Friday. I don't know what the dates look like then. Yeah. And then on the Lord's Day, he would be preaching. And so in some sense, there's an idea of being a tent maker, because what I want, what I ideally see the church doing is being able to support whatever it may be that we're doing as a church. Like, like if we grew and it was great and I needed to take on a full-time salary, I understand that. But like, you know, when you're talking about the messy and the dirty, I know that the church might not be that big.
Right.
And, but I have to be okay with that.
Yeah.
But what I would want to see ideally is people who disagree living and loving each other in unity, in community, with the central part really binding us all together in Jesus, right?
Right.
Because even I, as the pastor, will have my convictions. The church we're a part of is a peace church.
Right.
So we believe that that's where Jesus calls us to. I'm a conscientious objector.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that people who are a part of the military or were a part of the military, do support the military, wouldn't be welcomed in my church.
Right.
I may disagree. My church doctrine may not hold to that.
Right.
But that's okay, because we're doing this together.
Right.
You know? And I know that that's ideal. Like, that's, I'm an idealistic fool for thinking that may be what the church looks like.
And there's a, because unity is not conformity.
Exactly.
Unity, there has to be diversity in order to have unity.
Exactly.
And so, absolutely right. So you're thinking it's more of a biblical sense rather than the traditional church sense.
Correct, yeah.
Into it. How about you, Jake?
You know, that's hard. It's something that I'm beginning to ask myself, and whatever it looks like, I think I agree a lot with what Jacob said about it being diverse but still being unified in regards to a compassionate and genuine love for Christ.
Right.
For all walks of life,
right,
age, gender, whatever. I mean, I think I would like to be a part of a church that is willing to listen and to be messy and to ask hard questions, mm-hmm, and to be a place where it's okay to show up and just be like, today sucks. Like, today is, I'm not in a good place today.
Right.
And have people come around that person and not give the like patented, oh, God's got a plan for this.
Right.
Like, you know, there's a reason for everything, but show compassion in the sense that they dive into that hurt or that pain. And conversely too, when someone come, you know, I want people to come in and just, and be willing to be able to boast of happiness and people to celebrate with it. And so I think what I'm getting at is I want it to be a authentic place. And I've begun to hate that word authentic, because I think it's so like popularized now, but I want it to be a place where Christ is at the center, and that His will is first and foremost,
right?
And we're unified in our love for Christ.
Absolutely.
As well as each other.
Do you mind if I give a quick example?
No.
My dad's church. My dad's and I use this term not in a disparaging way, but my dad's a conservative pastor of a Calvary Chapel.
Okay.
It's a Calvary Chapel in Northwestern Washington. By me saying Calvary Chapel,
I understand.
People listening, yourself and myself, already in our mind's eye have an idea of what that looks like.
Exactly. So Calvary Chapel, why don't you say what other people think of Calvary Chapel?
Well, I think depending on where you're at, Calvary Chapel could be, for a lot of people, a great experience,
right,
because it's where a lot of people in the 60s, 70s, and 80s came to know the Lord.
Right.
People have come to know the Lord through people like Greg Laurie and others. So I think you have that
right
idea. You also have the kind of hyper-conservative political versions of Calvary Chapel that are out there that a lot of people associate kind of the bad press Calvary Chapel.
But Calvary Chapel takes – usually when you preach at a Calvary Chapel church, you take word by word, scripture by scripture.
Yes, absolutely.
And don't differentiate from
correct.
That, right?
Yeah.
Boom.
So you have that.
Yeah.
So like I said, even right now as I say that,
right.
people are thinking in their mind – oh, great, Calvary Chapel or
Calvary Chapel.
Down. Yeah, thumbs down. So my dad is a Calvary Chapel pastor, has been for 11 and a half, 12 years now.
Okay.
But I think one of the things that I respect about my dad is that, and what we've talked about, is that he wants that realness, that authenticity, but his church lives it.
Okay.
His church has a bunch of people who go to it that are what I said earlier. They're middle to late aged white folks
right.
with who wear suits or whatever on Sundays.
Right.
But he also has a lot of people who are former drug addicts and alcoholics. And he has a lot of the misfits that other churches have literally said, you're not welcome here.
Right.
But let me tell you about a church that you're welcome at.
Okay.
And it's my dad's church.
Okay.
And, you know, for a long time, I really struggled with it being a Calvary Chapel. My own experience with Calvary Chapel hasn't always been positive.
Okay.
But I think that in my relationship with my dad and watching his church go and being up there, one of the things that comes through everything else at my dad's church is this sense of love for one another,
right.
this sense of community, this sense of we're in this together.
Right.
And you have story upon story, whether it's the people who grew up in the church
right.
and have been there for the last 70 years
right.
or the people who didn't and have been there for the last six
right.
months. What you have, though, is this wonderful love and unity. But what it also means is that on a regular basis when I talk to my dad, and he won't mention names,
right.
but you'll hear, we're dealing with this marriage problem or we're
right.
dealing with this, you know, kid who did this or
yeah.
oh my gosh, here's this other thing that just came up with
right.
this, you know, whatever. But like when I ask my dad, would you quit? Would you do it all over
right.
again differently? The answer is always no, because
right.
what he's doing is exactly what he thinks the Lord is calling him to do,
right.
what he believes the Lord is calling him
and
to do.
And the thing is, I want you to share as we close the podcast, your dad wrote a note to your guys' friend
mm-hmm.
that's gay. And I thought that was really powerful
yeah.
too.
Yeah. So my dad, Calvary Chapel, one of the things that they are known for is their hard biblical stance on homosexuality and saying that it's a sin. It's
right.
It's one of the things that they're known for. And so my dad does hold to that. He holds that conviction rightfully so. But the difference is that where I think a lot of churches who hold to that, and again, this is church as a whole, not just Calvary Chapel,
right,
not
right.
just anything, where a lot of churches would stop on that is by not being in community with people, not willing to love people.
Right.
Where my dad wants everybody to know that his love for Jesus is poured out in the way that he loves other people.
Right.
And so our friend has received, you know, Facebook messages or received notes from my dad that'll just simply say, you know, I love you and you're welcome in my home. You're welcome at our church.
Right.
If you're ever in the northwestern Washington area,
right.
I'd be disappointed to find out that you didn't stop by for
right.
a lunch.
Yeah.
And I think that's a powerful thing when we as pastors are willing to take that next step
right.
and say, even if I hold to my convictions in whatever it may be, again, for me, you know, homosexuality or the peace position or,
right.
you know, whatever it may be, when we're willing to take that next step, though,
mm-hmm.
and say, despite my convictions, I love you.
Yeah.
Let's go have a meal.
Right.
Or you're welcome to stay the night in my home or whatever it may be. We get beyond just our own ability to just say out loud whatever
right.
we have,
yeah.
and we start impacting the people in the way that we love
right.
them. And
yeah.
it's kind of what you had said previously, is that we start actually doing life with people in
right.
that way
yeah.
instead of just kind of being these talking doctrinal heads that just
right.
sit up there and kind of bobble our heads and say things what we think we need to say.
Absolutely.
We actually start putting the love of Jesus, the love of God, into the way that we interact with people. And that has a much more powerful, I don't want to say change, that just has a much more powerful impact in the way that people view Jesus through us.
Absolutely.
When we take that next step.
Yeah, absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. Well, thank you guys. I appreciate you. In fact, I want you guys to push your service as well. I don't know who listens to this podcast. Our service is every Sunday. We're doing one service at 10 o'clock every Sunday morning. When are your services at Grace Point?
Sundays at 10 a.m. in South Ontario.
Mm-hmm. South Ontario. And yeah. Do you have a web page?
We do.
www.gracepointontario.org.
Do you really have to say www?
Yeah. I think he was trying to stall as I bring up my phone because it's like saved in my phone. Okay. So I never actually... It's yeah, you're right. It's gracepointontario.org.
Okay, so you can come visit us. Out in the Ontario area.
Yeah, Ontario, and, California, not Canada.
Also, Ontario, California. And another thing, too, you're thinking of starting your own podcast, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is, I really want to hold you accountable to
it. I appreciate it, yeah.
Because once you start your own podcast, what will be the podcast about?
It is going to be an offshoot of the ministry that I already do called Listen.
Okay.
Which you can visit at whylisten.org.
Whylisten.org.
Okay. There's already a couple of old podcasts up there from a few years ago, but I'm just going to kind of be working on that. And ultimately, it's going to be an interview-style podcast, but it's going to be similar to what I just talked about church, where it's going to be open to anybody who wants to talk about something in an unfiltered way.
Okay.
So
if you want to join Grace Point Church this coming weekend or Marine Christian Fellowship, and our website is marinechristianfellowship.com, or you can find us on Facebook as well. And so thank you. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Remember, every day is a gift from God. Use it wisely. And I'll see you guys next week. God bless.